Anna Henderson, Chief Political Correspondent for SBS, with the latest from Canberra after a whole day's delay to make way for the Starmer drama in London last night. Anna, welcome to the show.
It was dramatic indeed. I was happy to make way for the most up-to-date coverage on, you know, some political uprisings in another country.
It was pretty red hot, wasn't it? Right.
You know, it actually made me reflect on the relationship between Anthony Albanese and Keir Starmer, because they have a very close relationship. And I got to see it up close at 10 Downing Street in Kananaskis in Canada when they were together there as well. Like, they have really sort of brokered diplomatic deals together. Australia's tied itself very much to Keir Starmer's agenda. So it'll be interesting to see how things change with new leadership in the wings.
And talking of his departure, Albanese sounded really, you know, really moved.
I think probably what really underscored it for me was we travelled to Liverpool while we're in the UK, and Anthony Albanese spoke at the UK Labour conference to sort of introduce Keir Starmer on that stage. Julia Gillard was in the audience as well. He sort of saw the two Labour movements and how they work together, but also this close camaraderie, personal friendship. It seemed like in the absence of, you know, a leader in the US who Australia was particularly close to, that it was Keir Starmer who'd become a bit of a, I guess, the diplomatic friend to rely upon.
Do we know what the new man thinks of AUKUS?
We're told, according to Deputy Prime Minister and Defence Minister Richard Marles today, that everything is fine, that AUKUS prevails, you know, withstands different leadership change. But I don't think we have yet heard a really clear enunciation, and we don't even know who is going to take over, though it does seem like Andy Burnham is going to be the person who does step in of AUKUS going forward. But we do hear, I guess, from analysts and from perhaps the back rooms of military establishment, that these kinds of arrangements don't necessarily change with a change of political leader, even potentially, you know, different political party. But I think the finer details of that we'll have to wait and see.
Now, look, let's address the looming monoculture. I looked up, you know, the dangers of monoculture, because it sort of struck me that we've had some lessons here from agriculture about what monocultures can do. And what Pauline seems to be recommending for the whole of the nation allows for mechanized efficiency, one authority told me when I searched the net. But monocultures systematically degrade soil, wipe out local biodiversity, and leave entire food systems vulnerable to catastrophic collapse. Nevertheless, that is what Pauline Hanson wants for Australia.
Well, David, I also looked on my dictionaries.
We do our homework on this show.
To do some comparative analysis. And I think that, you know, this idea of a culture dominated by a single element or a single, you know, reality, something that binds people together, is what Pauline Hanson is putting forward. And it just is going to be really quite interesting to see, once the dust settles on what she had to say last week, how many Australians react to that. Because we have heard for a long time the concerns about immigration, and they have been concerns that have been raised, you know, across the political spectrum now as well. It hasn't just been One Nation raising concerns about whether or not the migration process has been well managed in Australia, but this is taking it much further than just there are too many people coming into the country and it's not well managed enough and we don't have enough resources for all the people who are arriving, if that is, you know, the political argument. It's now turned into an argument about how you are supposed to behave when you get to Australia. And some of the rhetoric around that, the suggestion that one in four Australians, have trouble with their English language skills, it's totally wrong. But there are a number of Australians who identified in the last census, around one in four, who speak a language other than English, but that is alongside their English language.
Yes.
Just a few percent said that they struggled with English language skills. So the problem about this debate now is that not only has it become something which is quite hard to pin down in terms of what One Nation is trying to prosecute, But on top of that, there are some facts and figures which are being used in a way that doesn't really reflect reality.
Patrick White's partner, Manoli Lascaris, became a naturalised Australian sometime in the 1950s. He was Greek. And at the naturalisation ceremony, and he never forgot this, he told me about it sort of 40 or 50 years later, he was advised not to speak Greek on the tram. And you just think, okay, right, that's what Australia was then. But there is this interesting difference, isn't there, in the figures. Our anxieties about the size of migration and indeed the kinds of migrants who are coming to this country rise and fall. And there is always something somewhere between 20, 30, sometimes a little bit higher percent of people who are deeply troubled by the size of migration or by who's coming. But for decades now, there has been an extraordinarily high acceptance that multiculturalism has done Australia good. I'm a great fan of the Scanlon surveys, and they show it up there in the 80%. But there have been new figures that have come out in the last couple of days, haven't there, Anna?
You're referring to the Lowy figures?
Yes.
Yes, they have come out, and they have, I think, suggested that there is a change underway. I mean, this Lowy report, which comes out annually, is a bit of a temperature test across the country, margin of error considered to be around sort of 2.5%. And what it's documented in the last year is that there has been and is a historic decline in support for multiculturalism at the moment.
But a decline, to what?
Well, let me just refer down to my documents here.
It's a decline to about 70% support for multiculturalism.
But I think when I spoke to the Lowy team about this, because I think it's a good point that you're raising there, like what are we actually measuring, that it's still a significant number and that it's still, when wrapped around the other issues that people identified in that report, in terms of the economic pessimism that was also being perceived and that people were feeling, and some of the concerns about what's happening across the world, that it is, I suppose, when you look at a report like that and you're trying to work out why polling might be changing as well, I suppose it is instructive that this decline has occurred, and is there some kind of correlation?
Sure, but what Pauline Hanson is arguing for is opposed by at least 70% of Australians. Why are we so scared of her?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of people necessarily being scared, but I think what we saw today from the opposition leader, Angus Taylor, when he was asked directly, firstly, about the idea of the monoculture, and then pressed in his media event about whether he supported multiculturalism, is that there was a very strange reality that he didn't want to repeat the word multicultural or seem to endorse that word. And it was over multiple questions and answers that I think the media in Canberra realised that he was really studiously avoiding that word. And I think that is a bit of a departure for the opposition, even though there have been policies that have been announced recently which have been far more in the form of a crackdown on immigration in terms of, you know, what temporary residents and even permanent residents would have access to if they're not Australian citizens, the Australian values test. We knew they were going down the path of, you know, a tougher border control regime. But now to see the opposition not willing to endorse the concept of multiculturalism is significant. And I do wonder if the One Nation speech hadn't happened last week, if Pauline Hanson hadn't raised this issue, whether or not we would have seen that unfold in the same way today.
It's staggering, Anna. It is staggering. The Liberal Party has lived by the notion of whatever the initial problems are, in the end, multiculturalism is good for the country. That goes back to the earliest days of Menzies. Anyway, the Leader of the Opposition has explained himself to you, has he?
He's provided a statement later in the piece to further add to his remarks. And in that statement he says, "I believe in an Australia where everyone respects our laws, shares our values and contributes to the fabric of our country. That is the type of multiculturalism that we believe in. We reject Labor's multiculturalism, which sees different people held to different standards because of their cultural background. That is how we have ended up with anti-Semitic hatred on our streets, ugly protests on the Harbour Bridge, terrorist sympathisers back in our community, and non-citizens accessing benefits that should be there for all Australians. That's the end of the statement. So now different political parties want to define that word very differently and use it, you know, as part of a political weaponry.
Now, we've only got a couple of moments left, unfortunately, Anna, to celebrate or to note that the deals have been done which will allow the tax changes through.
Well, this is really interesting. So to cap off, I mean, we talked about mocktails and feed up in the lockup for budget. It seems like such a long time ago.
Yes.
The debate was fierce in the interim, and the government's been under, you know, a lot of pressure, and the opposition has applied some of that pressure too around whether the changes were fair and whether they went too far and, you know, painted outside the lines and had unintended consequences. But now we get to a point where the government has made some changes, not hugely significant, but some changes to the initial broken election promise plan, negative gearing, capital gains tax changes. Got support from the Greens today to get that through. It's already expecting support from the opposition to get the NDIS massive cuts that are planned through to, quote, make the system more sustainable. You know, the government actually, in the course of today, has locked down, it appears, significant portion of its agenda and its savings going forward. So, yeah, quite a moment.
What have the Greens got out of the government?
So the Greens have got a couple of things. They really wanted to extend the inquiry into the National Disability Insurance Scheme changes, those cuts, which was a very short inquiry of just 3 days, and that's now been extended to a matter of weeks. It will report back in August, so they've basically pushed out the timeframe for that. They've got no concessions on actual changes to the bill, but they're hoping that will build sort of public momentum for change. And so they're celebrating that. And they've also managed to make amendments to prevent people from using self-managed super funds as a vehicle for them to borrow money to buy residential property.
Yeah, a tiny little thing, an interesting little tax loophole that they've got shut.
Very, very small. And I think they admit they haven't got a huge amount of additional change out of this, but the opposition is running a line at the moment. Like, what has been done behind the scenes? What don't we know about? Are there things that are secretive about what's been done? So they've raised, suspected that perhaps there are things that aren't public that have been agreed. I don't know the answer to that question. I spoke to Larissa Waters today and she was very much of the view that everything was open and transparent. But she did say, and I think this is interesting, that she had tried to get something more for renters. So I guess watch this space in terms of whether the Greens are needed to pass legislation again in the near future and if they bring that up again.
Anna, thanks for joining the show again and bringing us up to date with Canberra. I have been speaking to Anna Henderson, Chief Political Correspondent with SBS.